welcome to another edition of Leading Edge Interviews. I am your host, Supa Dave. Thank you so much for joining me as I dig a little deeper into the mind of one of the greats in the world of modern progressive rock and metal. Now, the band Frost debuted nearly 20 years ago, 2006, with the album Million Pounds, which was an absolute classic slice of progressive rock, modern progressive rock. And so this is a little bit overdue on my part, but I'll be talking to Jem Godfrey, keyboardist, vocalist, writer for the band. He's been with them since the beginning, and he's going to tell us all about the band's newest album, Life in the Wires, which comes out October 18th, and why that album actually represents Frost finally getting around to a progressive rock band's rite of passage. At least that's the way Jem sees it. But I'll let him tell you all about that. So, without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Jem Godfrey of Frost. Well, thank you, Jem. I really appreciate you joining me. It's good to have you on as a guest and talk with you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. So, I'm curious. You guys got the new album coming out. Frost will be coming out with Life in the Wires. What is it, October 4th, if I'm not mistaken? October 18th. I'm 2 weeks ahead. I don't 18th, know why that is.
There's a third promo sort of single coming out.
There we go.
Starts of October, so it could be that.
You got to be careful with my memory and numbers sometimes. It gets a little wacky. So anyway, so it's interesting this time around with the album. And so my understanding is that you personally are of the belief that it's at least somewhat obligatory for every prog-oriented band to eventually put out a double concept album. So I got a kind of a two-part question for you. One, what took you guys so long? And how did you decide that now was the time? Is there like a prog version of a biological clock that's been ticking?
possibly, yes. Nothing before really kind of lent itself to sort of a double album concept, really. It was kind of, our albums have always been sort of fairly concise and not particularly linked. You know, they are by and large a sort of collection of songs with, if they are linked, it's quite tenuous, but you know, we haven't really had something that is literally a story from start to finish. And I think with this, it was just a kind of idea that I was starting to gather quite a lot of music, and I had this idea as a title of Life in the Wires. I didn't really know what it meant at the time, but I did kind of think that it sort of sounded concept-y, you know, concept album-y. And so I think I just sort of thought about it really in terms of what would be a thing that Frost would do in a kind of concept album arena, you know. And I think I've always been fascinated by radio and, you know, and radio waves and long distance and short wave and, you know, long wave. And when I was a kid, I used to sort of tune my parents' radio, and it would kind of, you get all these whistly noises, and then suddenly you'd hear something in Portugal and then China and, you know, and all these different places. And I think that just got me thinking about a sort of a concept about, you know, what if there was a character that was trapped in the radio almost, although this isn't really the story, it sort of developed from this, you know, and was trying to be heard. And I remember thinking, oh, I like this, you know, this is quite a nice idea. And then it sort of, and then I started to think, well, this is sort of, if we were ever going to do a concept album, this would be the sort of thing we'd like to do. And so I was writing bits of music and ended up sort of having so much stuff sort of knocking around on the hard drive that I thought, you know, I was in my tiny old brain, I was slowly putting two and two together, going, concept about radio, lots of music. And so it crept up on me. I mean, that wasn't really a plan, but I remember just sort of sitting there one afternoon looking at the hard drive and all the ideas and stuff on my phone and just thinking, uh-oh.
At a confluence of ideas and opportunity, basically.
Exactly, yes. And so the idea being is that obviously to do that, because I knew it was going to be a lot of work. So I thought, okay, what I'll do is at some point in the next, I don't know, year or so, I will block out a bunch of time. Where I don't have any external, you know, I'll just say, I'll sort of close the phones down and say, I'm not around to work for some other things. Because I think the way to do it, I couldn't have done it like we've done with the other albums, where it's a little bit, then you stop, and then a little bit, because it would have just taken forever. So I kind of adopted the John Mitchell approach of, I have an album to do, like he does with Lonely Robot, and then he sort of blocks a month out. and you just burn through the month until it's finished. And so I thought, that's what I need to do. If I'm going to get this done, I'm going to have to just basically, you know, block out the rest of the world and get on with it. Unfortunately for me, because I don't work as fast as John, his 1 month for me took 5.
Wow.
But we got there in the end.
Yeah. Well, it's a big undertaking, a big concept you've got going here with the story. And it's very cinematic, listening to it and looking at it. And it leaves me wondering because, you know, I'm familiar enough with the movie making process or novel writing process where they'll use the process of storyboarding or creating an outline so they can get their story all lined up and put together as they're writing it or even before they start sometimes. But how did those processes compare to what it was like for you creating this story for Life in the Wires?
It was pretty similar, actually. I did sort of write a synopsis to start with, just as a kind of, as a guide. So I didn't end up wandering off, you know, aimlessly in different corners. So it was very much, it was charted as a story from start to finish, which was good, actually, because it meant I could be, you know, it kept me focused on what I needed to do. And also it gave me a chance to kind of think about the character, you know, and sort of, and creating a little bit of a backstory, which is sort of explained in the lyrics and also in the album artwork. There's each song has a little kind of sentence, a little pricey sentence that sort of explains what's happening. And so it was just a question of plotting it out from start to finish. And then once that was done, it's funny with synopsis, actually, because it's only a page, you know, or a page and a half. And that turned into 86 minutes of music, I think it is. And I think really the secret is just to keep it simple, which sounds weird, but you know, have a very simple idea and try and stick to it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I guess there's that certain extra space of freedom because with a movie, you know, you're putting all these images on the screen and the actors got to be in their places and there's all these lines written and it fills all this space. And, you know, novel is pages and pages and pages. It's exceedingly long and lots of detail and they got to be aware of plot holes. But I think writing from this perspective, it's a little less, I guess, detail oriented because it's mostly about the music in many ways, but also there's a story, but you don't go quite to that level of detail, I guess, in the course of creating it.
That's right. But I think also what's nice about doing it in a musical term, I mean, I haven't done it like, for example, Jeff Wayne's musical War of the Worlds, where there's like, you know, speech and sound effects and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what was nice was kind of, it's almost like the music allows the listener a certain degree of their own imagination, I hope. You know, and I've tried to set up these sort of cinematic sort of worlds, you know, and sounds, and hopefully the listener can kind of imagine their own version of how it looks and how the character looks and how the whole sort of story unfolds. And I think that's one of the nice things about music rather than film. Although I think books, you know, also have that capacity for your own imagination to play a part in it. And I think that's one of the reasons why I generally, as a person, I love books exactly because of that. You know, you can kind of fit the world that you're reading about into your own version of how you imagine it. And I hope that with this, there's enough scope for people to do the same, I think.
Right. So for those, obviously I'm familiar because I've listened to it and I've read about it at this point, but for those not familiar, give us a little synopsis, as you would, since we're using that word now. Word I don't get to use often. Good vocabulary word. But share a little synopsis of the story itself that is Life in the Wires.
I think it's about a character really that you know, is in actually, I mean, the thing about it is actually set in the world that we created in Day and Age, on the album Day and Age. I had this idea that at the end of Day and Age, there's a little bit of radio static and this voice that says, "Can you hear me?" Just as repeat to fade cuts out. And then this album starts with that section. So it's sort of like a kind of continuous segue. But I think what I really enjoyed about doing Day and Age with John was we sort of created this world in our heads, and I can sort of see it. You know, it's these characters that we wrote about on that album. And my kind of idea was, what if there's another person in that world whose story hasn't been told yet, which is kind of what got me thinking about it. So this is about really a character who's in that world, who sort of, again, sort of feels a bit disaffected because of whatever reason. I mean, sometimes we look at the world and don't feel that we fit in some respects. And so it's about a character like that who's looking for something, you know, looking for some sort of direction in their life. And they have a radio. They have an old AM radio, like, you know, like I did. And it's sort of, that was an inspiration for that moment. So this person is tuning to the radio as he likes to do every night, just to see what's out there. And then a voice is on the radio, you know, that speaks to him. Or at least it's speaking to you know, the idea. So this character is thinking, who is this person? Who is this person? And so basically the story is a tale of our hero, Nio, his name is, going on a sort of pilgrim's progress trek to find the origin of this voice and, you know, and where this person is, and sort of the ensuing story is that obviously, you know, there's a slight sense these days that the independent thought is slightly frowned upon in certain spheres. And so basically he sort of gathers a troop of people who are quite antagonistic towards the idea of him doing something different to everybody else. And it's just a sort of big caper in that respect.
Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. And it's just interesting, the idea that you guys have kind of built this world that extends over two albums. I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, we had this idea that there's the game Grand Theft Auto, and I used to play a lot when I was a kid. And I had this idea that, you know, in that game, you could jump in a car if you want and just drive to the next, you know, next city, you know, or drive over the bridge. And there was always the case of, you'd arrive and you were totally improvising, which is what I loved about it. But you'd arrive in this place and there was another, you know, this world was already happening and it was populated by characters and you could interact with them. And I had this sort of idea with Day and Age, you know, that the songs on that album, songs like Terrestrial, for example, there's the character who's, you know, he's at sea and he can't get back. And he's, you know, he's in a dire situation at sea. That's happening at the same time as the characters, you know, the Life of the Wire characters. I just had love this idea that this is just sort of whole world. So that's happening over there, but this is also happening over there. And it's just, you're just dropping into different sort of people's lives, you know. And I that was something that I was quite sort of taken with. I don't think many people have done that in a musical sense.
Yeah. No, I really don't. And that's what I think is very, very unusual and very, very intriguing about the entire concept. And I guess there's this other wrap-in thing that, and as I was, you know, reading along with the lyrics and listening, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I don't feel like you hear this quite as much anymore, but a certain, you know, as you said, a love of radio, the idea of radio in and of itself. And we kind of entered this age of streaming, you know, where it's starting to supplant radio, and radio seems to be, at least certainly in the US, more of a dying medium.
It is. Yeah, it is. But I think there's also a sort of, there's quite something quite romantic about radio, I think, certainly in those more AM, long wave, short wave kind of things. I mean, FM radio is you know what it is, and you know it's been a mainstay. But I love that there's people broadcast; they can't help themselves. And this is also part of that sort of the concept of Day and Age, is that, you know, with the guys with the megaphones on the front, is it's everyone is just broadcasting, you know, and not many people are actually listening.
Yeah,
I thought, what if I flip the idea on the head that actually there is somebody listening, and you know, to all these broadcasts, and radio for me seemed like the most sort of obvious way that you might hear that, because obviously, as you say, with streaming, it's on demand. So there's very little chance you're going to happen upon something, because chances are you're going to find it and you're going to start it, you know, and you watch it from the start. Whereas, because radio is continuous, there's always that sort of slight chance that you might happen upon something completely random. You know, but I actually, back in the 80s when I was growing up, I did actually find quite a lot of music that I liked, you know, just by scanning radio. Yeah. Radio sort of channels, and then of course the problem with that being radio as it was in the old days is you didn't know what it was, and there were some songs I heard and I didn't find out what they were till about 10 years later when I heard it again. I went, oh my god, what's that? So it's kind of, you know, that's I like the idea that radio is, you know, that it could be the progenitor of happy accidents or weird chance meetings, or there's those famous number stations which everyone talks about, with the bells and the code that's all transmitted, you know, from country to country to secret agents and stuff. And that's real and that's out there. So I just find it, it's just a fascinating kind of sonic universe, isn't it, I think?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There's something I think to be said for it, especially in the sense that, you know, it puts me in mind back of a snippet of poetry. I remember, you know, begin the day with a friendly voice, a companion unobtrusive.
Exactly.
I can't call where I got that at the moment. I have to look that up sometime and figure out where that came from. But but there's that bit of that nostalgia there. And it's funny. Coincidentally, I just happened to watch a movie that was based on a Pulitzer Prize winning novel called All the Light You Cannot or All the Light We Cannot See.
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with, you know, the shortwave or ham radio kind of thing or whatever that was central to the plot. That was a really kind of cool movie. So this has that similar thought behind it with that voice out there that impacts an individual to a degree that you know can affect and even change their life in a dramatic way. It's kind of cool to hear all that, but it's also sort of sad to think that to an extent it's being replaced by streaming where there's no human involved.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And there's so many radio stations now are automated, for example, and there is no presenter. There's plenty of adverts, but there's no presenter. So it's kind of, you know, it's interesting that, but what I like about the sort of those older radio bands is that they are still there. That's what's sort of fascinating about it. You know, that if you go on to get a radio now, actually there's even internet websites where you can scan sort of analog radio. I've spent loads of time listening to sort of stations in America and also you can find like ham radio guys who are just chatting on two massive antenna between each other. One's in Alaska, one's in Saskatchewan, you know, and they're having a brilliant conversation. And it's so kind of comforting, isn't it? Because humanity is out there and still being human, which is lovely.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's almost in a certain sense, you know, I guess in my mind, the theme of the album in many ways could be almost that search for humanity within all the machinery that keeps us apart.
I think that's exactly what it is. Wow. Hit the nail on the head, to be honest.
I almost sounded profound there for a moment. I better write the date down here.
Oh, God, it's beautiful, man.
Make note of that. Now, it's funny. A lot of times when I'm talking with guests about their new music, I one of the things I like to ask is, you know, where did you try to stretch yourself or where did you try to do something different this time around? And obviously, in this point, you went with the double album. But I guess there are other aspects of it I understand where maybe you weren't so much stretching yourself, maybe revisiting things you hadn't done in a while.
I think, yes, possibly. I in terms of where it went, I mean, obviously one of Frost's kind of rules of thumb is to sort of always try and do something different to what we've done before, you know, or to sort of switch or do a little bit of a, you know, a 180 or try and do things that people maybe don't expect,
yeah.
You know, in the kind of, in the truest progressive sense of the word. And I think, ironically, I sort of got to the point we'd sort of finished Day and Age and we'd had a bit of a moratorium on soloing. You know, we're not going to do any of that because sometimes it can be the easy way out, you know, and what we'd rather do is with that one, maybe let's just do some clever arrangements and have a play with that. And we did do that. And I think it worked quite well. But of course, the 180 from that stance is to go back or, you know, towards more of a sort of, I'm not going to say virtuosic, but you know, in terms of instrumental sections, more of a soloing mentality. Mm. And I think one of the strange things about that is to sort of do a 180 from what we'd done before is almost to kind of come full circle back to the sort of Million Town way of doing things. And I think what was appealing for me to that was I thought to myself, what are people not going to expect? And what they're not going to expect is for us to do something we've done before. So that in itself is a sort of weirdly paradoxical rebelling against ourselves by doing what we've done before. So it was kind of interesting in that respect. And also because Million Town was getting on, I think it's 19 years ago it came out now, which is insane. Yeah. it felt like it was quite a nice time maybe to just sort of, you know, recognize where we've come from. And also I haven't sung an entire album on my own since Million Town, you know, pretty much. Yeah. And so it was nice to kind of think, well, you know, if I'm going to do that, I might as well have some echoes of that album. But I think also there's shades of experiments in Mass Appeal on here and bits of Falling Satellites as well. This kind of, it's a sort of, what's the word? It was just nice to not be in too much denial about what we are as a band, you know, and to say, well, we are a progressive rock band, and so why don't we do some progressive rock?
Fair enough. Yeah, I think in the press release too, it mentioned something about you saying, "Wow, you know, it's been about 5 years since I really did a lot of soloing like this." And I thought, is that like getting on the proverbial bike, you know, when you get back to that, or did that take a bit of adjustment for you?
Well, I mean, the thing, obviously, I haven't actually stopped soloing at all. I mean, I'm at home, I'm practicing all the time, so I am playing, and you know, but it was more of a sort of compositional decision on that one. But in terms of our output, you know, we haven't done an album where there's been soloing since Falling Satellites, which was 8 years ago. So you asked people to wait nearly a decade. So I thought maybe we'll just go back there before everybody, you know, expires of old age.
That's funny. So in a certain sense, though, I guess that makes me wonder, because there is this, in the context of the album and in the context of what you were doing this time around, I guess there's a little bit of an undercurrent of nostalgia that's there.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much you were definitely aware of that. I think you were. But I'm wondering what you think has you in that kind of nostalgic mindset at this time of life?
I think you get to a point where, I mean, I'm in a position, I'm 52 now, about to be 53. And I've kind of got to a point in my life where it's becoming clearer to me that there's more behind me than in front of me in terms of, you know, time left. My friend of mine used to say when he hit 40 years old, his great phrase was halfway through the gig. You know, which was that sort of that, and I've definitely had that sense that, you know, as you get older, maybe you do start to, you know, be less of a hothead in terms of how you think and what you want to do and being a disruptor, you know, and trying to rattle the cage a bit. And I think sometimes what I've found with this is the few people who've heard it currently who I've played it to, there's been a couple of very trusted sort of allies of the band who I've played it to as well. And there's a real sort of sense, everyone has quite a warm sense of it being not a homecoming, but a kind of looking back and going, look where we've come from, you know, look at this journey. And I think that's, I'm not saying that we're always going to do that, but I think for this one, it just felt like, you know, as we're heading for 20 years since Millientown, it felt emotionally right to do that. And what I've noticed is the response has been really market about that. People have been really warm about it and thinking, you know, and we've just released today actually Moral Consequence, the second promo for it, and the video for that is a sort of compilation of all the old, we used to do these things called Frost Reports, which were, you know, these videos of how we made albums, and I basically compiled all that into this 8-minute segment, and it is quite nostalgic and sentimental. It's strange.
Yeah.
So it's kind of what I like is the juxtaposition. It's new music, but the visuals are sort of these old visuals. And we premiered it this morning on YouTube. And the response was everyone going, oh, do you remember that? Oh, do you remember that? You know, and I think that's quite nice. It sort of felt like it brought us all together.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it is, I guess, that part of that journey we all share to a certain extent, you know, that you get those stages of life and you reflect upon the past or upon the future in different ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, similar to guys like Peter Gabriel and David Gilmour putting out songs that are really reflective of, hey, you know, I'm looking way back on life and aware of encroaching mortality, you know, the longer I live. And
you know, I think that's right. But there's a sort of classic, you know, that I think it's a quoted thing we're saying, you know, it's okay to go forward as long as you remember where you've been and who you've been on that journey, you know? So I think it's, I'm just getting old, basically.
Well, we all do that. Hopefully there's only one way. There's only one other option.
Exactly. Yes, exactly right.
What my grandmother always would say, never get old or don't get old. I'm like, the only other option is not much more appealing. Thank you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but I think the fans will very much appreciate that because I, you know, the idea that there's this almost retrospective quality to it, and yet it's not you guys treading the same old ground either. You know, it's a little bit of both, I think, recognizing your past and acknowledging the future and What I've heard, yeah, it's a really fine album. You know, I think people are really, really going to enjoy it. And it's definitely got an emotional punch to it.
Yes. I mean, there's songs, there's one song in it called Absent Friends, which is very much about, you know, the people who aren't around anymore that you've loved, you know, and have been close to you. And I think it's part of as we move through life, this starts to happen. I think you're right. It's, you know, there's as much as it is a sort of new approach, I think there's definitely a sort of a slight, as you say, nostalgia is not necessarily the word. I think it's as you say, recognizing the journey that the band has been on. So it's a mixture of new and old, I hope. But I thank you very much for your kind words. It's much appreciated.
Oh, certainly. Well learned. Well earned. So I'm curious then too, and that's, you know, who did you listen to and who were you, you know, because I feel like that's a question you guys answer all the time. But I am curious too, when you had in your mind the idea of a double album, a double concept album, what were the ones that inspired you most to consider that? You know, what were the quintessential ones that have always stood out for you? And I'm curious if there are any lesser known ones that you throw out there too.
Well, I think this spring to mind immediately, there's two. There's The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, which is, you know, I'm a huge Genesis fan. And that was always that was always sort of, for them, it was such an unusual thing to do as well, you know.
Yeah.
And it is astounding. I know even now it's sort of, I think it's quite polarizing between sort of sets of fans. But I loved how it was the inspiration for the being a journey, I think, was from that. But also another album that I loved growing up, which was another double album. And what I loved about this was that because the physicality of the actual album was Out of the Blue by ELO. Because I was probably about 8, I think, when it came out. And just this huge gatefold, you know, and the inside of the spaceship on the thing at the front, and then, you know, and the beautiful artwork on the sleeves. You took the discs out and, you know, played them. That I remember. It was just that thing that everyone obviously talks about, the old cliche of you sit down and you listen to it and you look at it and you're in this place, you're taken somewhere else. So I think it was probably those two albums, just in the sense of, you know, the vinyl thing. I mean, this is one of the reasons. I mean, I wrote it literally as four sides of vinyl. I planned it as four 21 minute bits of music, you know, and that was based entirely on the ELO sort of concept, because I think on side three you had that Concerto for a Rainy Day thing, and that was all linked together, and, you know, and it was just that I liked how there was the other things that he liked on Mr. Blue Sky, where there's the Please Turn Me Over at the end of Mr. Blue Sky on the third, I think it's the third side, you know, all those things you can do to play with the physicality of a record. That was very attractive. And so there's a few things like that on the album where some of the links, for example, on the vinyl version is different to the CD version, which is different to the streaming version, because obviously the vinyl version has limitations at 21 minutes. The CD has a sort of 40 minute thing. So on the CD, there isn't the gap that you'd get on the vinyl, and there's a different radio link, and it was nice to just play with the different formats and have a bit of fun, you know, making each one unique to itself. And that was definitely an inspiration from Out of the Blue, I think.
And you're making me nostalgic for vinyl at the moment. Jeez.
Oh, that's the thing, because it's just they've arrived. The albums have arrived. There's a red vinyl version which the record company have sent me, and I opened it up yesterday. And I did have that goosebump moment, and I felt like I was 8 again, because it's such a lovely big sort of the artwork of the radio. When it's this big, it's much better than when it's on the CD and it's like that.
Yeah, you know? Right.
And it kind of, it's lovely. It's just lovely physicality to the music. Mm-hmm. So, or it gives that feeling to me, you know. So it's, yeah, I know, vinyl. I've been quite late to vinyl, but I'm totally into it now.
I probably would still be buying vinyl if it weren't for just at some point storage becomes an issue and you know, the equipment and all that. And so I gave it up a long time ago, and it's burgeoned so much as a market at this point that I'm going, well, I'm not going to try and catch up with anybody at this point.
Yeah, no, exactly. And they know how to charge as well. That's the other thing.
Yeah. But it is very cool. I do rather miss that. Yeah. You made me nostalgic there for a moment. And I can only say that my very first double album was, you know, at 10 years old, being Corrupted by the Wall, Pink Floyd.
Oh, yeah, that's another good one.
Start dark, Dave. Start dark.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's a good. Actually, I hadn't thought about that. Yes,
yeah,
there's definitely that. I mean, in terms of, you know, it being a story, but yeah, I mean, that was. I mean, I was probably a similar age to you when that came out, and half of it I didn't understand.
No,
and I found half of it very scary.
Yeah. And it's funny because when I look back and think of those times, I had no idea. You know, at that moment, I was listening to something that people called progressive rock. I had no idea. It's just an album that all the songs flowed together, and it was weird and cool. And I, you know, 10-year-old boys sat around and giggled because they said the word balls, and you know,
you and me both.
Yeah, shared experience. There you go. Oh, yeah. That's the beauty of music. So, final question for the day is as I wrap up with you here, because I know, you know, don't want to keep you forever and you've got things you've got going on, but I noticed the Frost website currently does not list any upcoming tour dates. I'm hoping that's going to change for the better pretty soon.
I hope so. That's all I can really say at the moment, because there's two things. There's this, the logistics of touring outside of the UK has been, obviously, I don't want to be one of these people that moans on and on about Brexit and the trouble that's caused touring musicians, you know, everywhere. And it's also, and the cost of it. So it's kind of at the moment, we are talking about how we would do it, you know, and if we could do it. Well, I mean, we need to get, that's the other thing, is to get back over to the States. We've only ever played in the UK predominantly in the last few years with a couple of shows in Europe, but actually it'd be lovely to get further afield. But it's just finding the right package, you know, the right tour package. If we go out with another band, for example, or we find some festivals, or you know, there's a way of doing something that's cost effective, because it's for the four of us to go out, obviously then we need sound, then we need a lighting guy, then we need crew, you know, tech, and then you're flying 10 people around the world.
Sure.
Yeah. And then that the cost of that starts to sort of become a bit frightening. But yes, we're definitely thinking about it. We're definitely talking about it, you know, and it would be lovely to play this of all the bits of music we've done. This really kind of screams, play the whole thing, you know, do it, do the thing. So I hope so. I hope so is what I can say. At this point, I haven't got anything planned, but yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, I'd love to see you guys. I get over to UK on occasion here and there. And, you know, if I can grab a concert when I'm there, great. You know, like maybe once in a while the stars align, but, you know, seeing you guys here in the US would be excellent.
It would be awesome. I'd love to do that.
Yeah. Beautiful. I certainly have a friend who is very, very excited if you guys are there, because she mentioned you guys right before I was getting here to set up for this. And I said, oh, well, that's interesting you bring them up. I'm going to be talking to Jem in about a half hour. And she's like, oh, you just dropped that so casually. I'm like, well. But she got to meet John when he was touring with Asia for their 40th anniversary thing. She's got pictures. She's always good at getting pictures with people. It's amazing. I don't know how she does it, but managed to bump into to him and one of the other guys. I can't think of his name now, in the lobby. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that tour went really well. I mean, it looked great, didn't it? I mean, the pictures and the films I've seen, it sounded absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So, but yeah, looking forward to that if you guys can do it. But meanwhile, I'm enjoying the album. It's really great. Out October 18th for those listening. So make sure you pick that up. And that's it. Thank you very much, Jem Godfrey, for joining me. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure talking with you, sir.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me on. I've had it's been a really good chat, actually, very in depth. And I feel quite emotional now.
Oh, well, there we go. Well, that's probably an effect of my other career. So,
all right, okay.
Anyway, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Take care, sir, and best wishes with the album and, God willing, a tour.
Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
Well, there you have it. There is the story behind why Frost has finally gotten around to doing what all the cool progressive rock bands have done. Put out a double concept album. Let me tell you, it's a good one. It is absolutely Frost doing what Frost does best, and that maintains a high level of quality. So, big thank you once again to Jem Godfrey for joining me to talk about the album, Life in the Wires. It comes out October 18th. Jim, I wish you and the rest of the band all the best with this album. I hope it's as big a success as your other ones have been, even bigger. And I really, really hope that tour gets put together, especially if it means I'm going to get to see you guys here in the U.S. Looking forward to that very much. The best of luck to you and the band, Jim. Thank you so much for your time once again. And those of you out there watching and listening, thank you as well. I really do appreciate you coming along for this journey, hearing about all this stuff from the artists themselves. I do appreciate it. That's why I love to do it. So if you could, a like and a subscribe would be an amazing thing. Also, take a look down in the description. You can find the link to buy the album from Frost. You can find my social media links and the link to The Expanse, my all-progressive rock and metal station on Live 365, featuring the Brain Salad Sunday every Sunday, as you might guess from the name, where it's nothing but 60s and 70s classic progressive rock. You'll really enjoy it if you like this kind of music. I'll pretty much guarantee it. So, once again, that's all I got for you. Always reminding you, never fear to deviate from the norm. Keep it proggy. And this is Super Dave, signing off.